You have to turn on the microphone before the microphone works. And we're ready to record here. Now we're recording on this as well. So, as I said, I'm just going to, this is for the people who are listening on audio later on today or whenever. I'm going to talk a bit about how that video was made. And again, if you're listening on audio, you should have gone to see the video. Although, if you're listening on audio like today or tomorrow, it didn't really upload that well at 126K per second. It would have taken longer than I had to do it, so it might not be there yet, but it'll be there. Anyhow, so I'm showing on the screen, if I can find it again, Adobe, and there, and now we have the audio tracks and the video tracks. There's nothing fancy here, right? And so the video tracks, of course, that's the picture, and the audio track, that's the sound. And what you need to notice, or should notice, is that it's not all one unit, but there's different bits. Adobe Performance encountered an error, a serious error. I had to shut down. So we'll restart Premiere. Do you want? Yeah, sure, why not? Couldn't hurt. Let's see. Okay. I have found that the program is either the program or the computer, whatever, it's a bit flaky. So if you're making something like video, save backup copies. Like really, really, really save backup copies. So here we go. Yeah, we're back where we were basically. Somebody, I read somewhere just in the last week, and the person has said, and of course, a laptop is utterly no tool to do video editing on. And I was thinking about it. If a laptop's all you got, it works much better than a rock, you know? It just doesn't like that at all. Okay, I'm not going to be able to do that. I have no idea why. So, but anyhow, so the video is made up. Stop that. Copy of copy. This tells you something, doesn't it? So I'll just point. Okay. All right. I'm gonna make the same mistake three times. So there's little bits and pieces like photographs, and this is a video clip, right? And sometimes you can put more than one video clip on the screen at once. You saw earlier on in the video that there was a face over another picture. And then down here, it looks like audio. It is audio. And it's actually, so really we have three major types of elements. And they're the three types, well, four if you count the title at the beginning and the credits at the end. So, and the elements are, the first and major one is audio, and then photographs, video, and then a little text. So those are elements that you all know. So it turns out there's really not a whole lot to it then. Now, for audio basically is just recording sound. You know this. And what I did two things. First of all, I used this to do the voiceovers. You know, I'm home again, but I just used this. I put it, I learned, don't just put it on the desk because it's an echo chamber. So I just put it like this, right? And I'm speaking now as though I was speaking into the video. This is my documentary narration voice. The goose is a low-flying bird that lives in the Canadian North. You know what I mean, right? Now, so I use, this is a Sony condenser mic, so it picks up the sound really well. You can use any microphone. It's just, the better the microphone you use, the better the sound is.
So,
but you know, it's online video, right? It's not like you're charging $10 a head to go see your film, right? Or trying to make $300 million in profits. If they can understand the words, it's good enough, my view. So, plug in this, and this thing also takes little batteries, so you have to plug those in. And then, this is the recording software. This is a program called Audacity. Now, the neat thing about Audacity, and why I like it so much, is it's free. This is absolutely, completely free and open source software. So what you do if you want Audacity for yourself, I never remember URLs because I'm really lazy. Go to Google, type in Audacity. So type in it. I'm using Firefox, so I don't actually have to go to Google first. Right, and so here's Audacity at audacity.sourceforge.net, and you can download it. Follow the instructions. You'll need a little extra piece of software called LAME, L-A-M-E, so watch for that. Okay, so and here's the download. And like I say, watch for the instructions. You download it, it'll install just, if you use Windows, it'll install just like any other application. And if you use Linux, it'll install just like any Linux application. Which is to say, badly. No, I'm just kidding. Oops. So, and other downloads, and here they are. So, and there's a Mac OS X download, but nobody cares. Sorry, I'm just kidding. Any Mac users here? See, I rest my case. I'm not talking about Mac anymore on this. Because I don't have to. So here's what it looks like, right? And so, plug in the microphone, start up Audacity, click on this big red dot, and talk. And I can see the sound waves, and when it's all flat like that, then I remember to turn on the microphone or whatever, and I keep going, and when I'm done talking, I'll hit this and it'll stop, and then you won't see it now, but okay, audio people, I'm stopping for a second. Okay, I'm done stopping it. Of course, I guess you figured that because you hear me speaking. The way Audacity, I think it's brilliant. It's just brilliant. What Audacity does is saves a whole bunch of little tiny sound clips. So, and the sound clips are just a few seconds each. So Audacity can keep taping and taping and taping. And, you know, I can keep talking. I've done like 3 hours straight talking on Audacity. Audacity lasted longer than my audience did. And so It will go on for as long as you have free disk space. And actually, if you use this, watch out for that. It will fill unless you delete these Audacity project files. And then once you've done your recording, right, you save your Audacity project file. And then, now I'm going to cut out again, people on audio, so sorry. And audio people, I'm back. So you can export this as an MP3. And now what you have on your disk drive, and me being me, I store them in one of my picture directories, are these, each one of these was an audio file created with Audacity. And I just said something into the microphone, like this. I said it louder than that. Marathon. What I saw on Sunday was not about the money. It was about the people of Bogota.
Right? Simple. So anyone can do that. Now, you use a cheaper microphone, no problem. The sound will be a bit tinny, but I have a tinny voice anyway, so it really doesn't matter. Audacity is free. And so basically all you need for sound is a computer and a microphone. And Audacity is really nice because when you look at it, you can actually edit your soundtracks. And, you know, it's kind of hard to show you while I'm recording like this, but I have multiple tracks. I can actually create one track and then create another track and then move them around so I have two tracks on top of each other. Now, I didn't do that with any of these files, because I have Adobe Premiere to do that for me. And so you see what I did here, right? Here's the here's the audio. And I have one track, this is a bit of music, and I have another track, actually this looks like music. Okay, this is me speaking, this is one of the songs, and this is me speaking again, and I have Bogota sounds and so on. And so I can layer these things on top of each other, and then if I want to see, or if I want to hear what it sounds like, oops, I just click on the play button.
Once I went to the supermarket, there was the boy, maybe 6 or 7 years old, playing the
game. Right. That's why my sound levels were bad. Right. I'm doing video production on a laptop. And so it was hard for me to get the good sound level with the sound cutting in and out like that. It was hard for me to get the timing right. And if I had a proper video editing suite, I could, but I don't. So I use a laptop. It works. And, you know, it's not perfect, but it's okay. I mean, you heard most of what I said, right? And, you know, if I spent more time at it, I could have made the audio a bit better if I wanted. The other thing I did for audio, this is an iRiver. It's not an iPod. Very important. The Apple makes the iPods. The iPods look a bit like this. They're slimmer. They've got better marketing and all of that. But what they don't do as well is record. And so, but this does record, and it records quite well. And I'm recording with it right now. It's got a battery life of, well, I don't know, 10, 12 hours or whatever. I also have the plug-in. I could plug it in if I had the adapter, but I don't, because I only had one adapter, but it's okay. The iPod will last all day. What I did in Bogota is I took the iPod, tossed it into my pocket, and it actually went in because I didn't have a microphone thing in there. I just tossed it in here. Oops. And I have this protective case on it, which is good because this thing has been dropped more times than I want to count. But it sticks to the pocket edge. I just did that. And I walked around. I walked around the city streets of Bogota. You remember hearing the choir singing when I started to introduce the Salts Cathedral. There, I walked into a church and just stood at the back while the people were singing. I went to the park while the people were playing drums. And I just walked around. Do anything, I just walked around and I picked up all the sounds. And so, let's see if I can't find it here. It might not be accessible. No, that's okay. And so, basically, what I got, I'd always forget, Adobe is stupid sometimes. All my documents are in this directory. Why wouldn't you go to this directory? No, you go back to the Adobe directory, the one directory I never use. Sorry, I'm complaining to Adobe. Here we go. So what I've done is I've just loaded the recording I made from that in here, and I'm going to go all the way to the end because it's quite long. And you just drag it in. There it is. And you wonder what it sounded like when I was in Bogota, like the real live version of what it sounded like. Oops, there we go. That's me putting it into my pocket. That's never quiet. And then so we go on, you get the elevator, because I was in a hotel. If you ever go to Bogota, do go to the Intercontinental Hotel. It's very nice. That was an unpaid advertising message. So what do we got here?
I don't know. The sound recording turned off somewhere along the line there.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention. That was my second try. The first try didn't work. These things happen, right? I'm just going to shrink this because it makes it a lot easier. See how I just shrink this down? Sound familiar? I'm in the park watching these guys. This thing is in my pocket. I'm just enjoying myself. No work. And then, so what I do is, you know, you can split a little bit out, right, and move this a little bit, split a little bit out, and now I've got a little sound clip. Whoops, that's not what I meant to do. I've got a little sound clip, and I can move it and drop it anywhere I want. And you're pointing at what? Oh, tape time? Okay, I'll stop now and you can change your tape. Now, you see, the audio is still recording while I'm doing this. So we exist on audio.
Well, you are offline. I would like to have the support position from the people in the fourth
place. Actually, I did talk to the drummers and told them what I was doing. The people, the Brazilian people, actually told me to stop. The other people that they were just dancing and just playing some recording, so I didn't ask the recording. So, but look, they're making noise in a public place. I'm not going to ask you permission to record what you just said. So, but you raise a good point, and the point is, you can't just toss any audio into here because somebody in the back of the room will complain. And you did notice I used a fair amount of music. And what I did there is, we haven't started yet. I want to be careful not to forget about our Skype test. I went to Google again, or actually I just used this, and I put, what was the exact phrase I used? Something like, Latin music, Creative Commons. Or something like that. I actually, this was the hardest part. I actually had to do some searching around. And what I was trying to do is find music and recordings that were licensed under Creative Commons. And I eventually hit this site, Jamendo, or whatever it is. And it's going to be old, so it's got lots of images and stuff and so on. And what this site is music that's available under a Creative Commons license. And consequently, what that does is when you license something with Creative Commons, what you are doing is you are telling other people that they can take that content and use it in their own things. And it's, here we go. So, and then it was the, so I just will browse and Latino, where's Latino? Trying to read again. I remember my bad eyes. Or enter a tag, okay. And again, I had to search around for this. It's a lot faster now, right, than I know where things are. So, and I found 13 albums. 13 albums full of music that I can use for free on my project. And you'd think that's a lot, but it isn't really when you're trying to pick songs to fit moods, but there's a lot more in other things, too. I didn't use that album. Well, they've got peppers that look like lungs. I'm just not there with that, you know? It's like, just trying to see what I did use. I think I used some of this. It's from Spain. It's sort of Latino. Yeah, here we go. And take a few seconds. It lets you preview it up there, which is kind of nice. It's not the best system in the world. Personally, I'm not thrilled about it, but and there it is. So I downloaded that. I downloaded a few others, and again, I imported them in the same way. And so these are completely legal for me to use. And I'm pretty sure making my own recordings is legal. In Canada, it's certainly legal. I know that. In Canada, as long as one person knows that the recording is taking place, you can record anything. Right? You don't need both people to know about it or agree to it. So that prevents police recording, where zero people know, right? But it does allow people to record their own telephone conversations and that. I don't know what the law would be here. But I wasn't here. And I have no idea. I bet you there's not even a law about it in Colombia, but I don't know. But normally I would do this recording at home, and if I was being really a stickler, I would check. I'd check the law. And then if I didn't like the law, I'd lobby to change the law, because I'm just that kind of person. So, I also took photographs. Photographs are very easy to do. You take your photograph, and so I'll take a photograph. Again, I'm not going to ask you permission if you don't notice that I'm taking a photograph. You're tough luck. All right, so I've got a photograph. And so, photographs on this card. People all over the world, 5-year-old kids are doing this. And in fact, they often skip the camera and the card thing. They just use their mobile. You see kids walking around with their mobiles like this, they're taking pictures. And they're being obvious about it. This whole concept of, you know, you can't take pictures, that's going to go by the wayside. Now, what I'm looking for is my card reader. Normally, I don't have this much stuff with me, but normally I'm not going from home for a month. This is a 8-in-1 card reader. When you buy these cameras, you can get by the cord that plugs in. I have lost more cords than I've ever had cameras. So I bought this in Vienna when I had lost my cord. And it reads all kinds of cards. And actually the new computers these days that you buy, they have the card reader built right in. It's one of these things you never would have thought you needed it until you did. So now, how are we? Our Skype cast is about to start. So I'll come back to that. But we got to do our Skype cast. Okay. Where? Here we go. I should reload this page. Now, actually, this is the first Skype cast I've ever done. So we need to sign in. But you notice on my computer it remembers, right? So I don't have to. Okay, starts in 1 minute. So just, okay. So, but that's why, no, I don't think I have any free USB ports, do I? No, I'll have to take this. That's a bummer. Okay. So, this is just USB. So this plugs into the same thing my mouse cord does, actually. And plug it in. I love the sound effects. Alright, so my thing's in there. Let's check out my Skype cast. Now, of course, I've installed various bits of software that want to do everything for you. And I don't like that. We'll try. I'll cancel this. I'll open a folder. That was Adobe Photoshop volunteering. We'll take care of this for you. So now, here's the photographs on my camera at the moment. And, okay, yeah, no, I've removed those. Good. And here we go. So it's that easy to do a photograph. This nice thing. This is my view. Everyone's watching. It's so much nicer than the people who are like not watching. Okay, how's our Skype cast? Now, again, it's the first time I've tried this. So what I think happens here is join the Skype cast. Now, yeah. If it asks you if you want to launch the application, say yes. And it's so, it's like, no, I clicked on the link. I don't want anything to happen. And now, because I wanted this to happen,
I Last bit on Donkey Dad of Belton Show. Last bit on Donkey Dad is the Nevada. To Nevada. On the Nevada's
rule. Okay, and greetings from Africa to those of you who are on the Skype cast. I don't know how to find out whether there is anyone on the Skype cast, because this is the first time I've done this, but we're live, and if there is anyone on the Skype cast, we'll find out. I wonder how you find that out. Well, someone can send me a message and tell me.
Can you hear us instead?
I can hear you. Where are you?
Hi, Stephen. It's Harold Copton from Saco.
From where?
It's Harold Jarkey.
Oh, Harold. Hi, Harold. Harold Jarkey.
Yeah, Dave Cormier as well, I see.
Can you see how many people are on?
We got three people.
All right. We got three people worldwide. And we got a room full of people here in Bloemfontein, South Africa. And Harold Jarkey lives down the road from me in New Brunswick. I can actually bicycle to his place. And who else is on, Harold?
Dave Cormier.
Oh, Dave Cormier. Dave Cormier lives in Prince Edward Island. That's like very close to where I live, too. That's kind of interesting. Okay, why don't I have a moderation screen? That's kind of...
We often have to get around, and sometimes people end up deleting them. I'm not sure. It should be around somewhere, Stephen.
Should be around somewhere, yeah. Okay.
It should be a browser window that HTTPS was...
Here we go. I got it. I found it. Right.
Because
so.
You can use that.
So let's eject Jarkey. Okay. So these are the people from around the world. If I want to know who they are, I'll just hit this little I button, and the profile shows up for a split second and then vanishes. Okay. And so on, right? So I can look and see who I've got and find out where they're from and all of that. So anyhow, this is a Skype test, and I'm just going to pick up where I left off. Those of you who are joining us from where I live, I've just before the lunch break here, I played a video. It was the world premiere of my video called Bogota. Now, maybe a little while before I can upload it. It's about 230 megs, so it'll take a little while to upload it. But and now I'm talking about what went into that video and what we've done so far, and the sort of theme that has emerged. Because, you know, you have a plan, and then that survives 10 minutes, and then you make things up after that. But the theme that's emerged is, you know, creating content. I guess it didn't really emerge. I kind of pushed it, didn't I? Oh, well. Nobody left the room. They all came, pretty well all came back after lunch, so I guess it's all right. And the way e-learning, too, is created out of content that's created easily and cheaply on the fly. And I've just talked to them about the microphones and Audacity and my iRiver, and I showed them my iRiver busily recording this session and my microphone on Audacity recording this session. And I've just taken a picture, actually. Oh, you'll like this, those of you who are on a remote site. I've just taken a picture, and I've put the card in the computer. And then I just opened it up. This is actually PaintShop Pro that it opened up in. PaintShop Pro is a commercial product. There is open source image editing software. It's called the GIMP, G-I-M-P. Now, I absolutely detest it. But a lot of people love it.
Like him.
Whoever that was. It's kind of surreal, isn't it? Because they just jump in, and you can mute them. I haven't muted them because why would I? I'm just not that kind of person. But the Skype does allow you, the Skype chatting does allow you to mute anyone. So I've been on the receiving end of that. So I use the Paint Shop Pro, which sells actually for about $140 Canadian. But I've had this copy since, like, I don't know, 1995. So there just hasn't been any improvements. Comment?
Just a quick question about cost. I'm using Skype to call in America, and it's dirt cheap. But if this were a conference for students,
right,
what would it cost?
Nothing. This is free. I'm not paying anything. Nobody in any of the remote communities is paying anything. How do you log on to this? Okay, yeah, because my website for some reason hasn't been on. Go to my alternate blog at halfanhour.com. H-A-L-F an hour. H-A-L-F-A-N-H-O-U-R .blogspot.com. And then you'll see a link. That's kind of interesting because there was somebody at the back of the room asking how to log on. And I could just barely hear her, and you guys probably didn't pick it up on the microphone, but she'll log on now, and she'll have a louder voice than I will. You just scroll down a bit, and you see where it says click here to register. As it turns out, you don't really register. You just click there, and then it says join the Skype cast now. And so I'll just show you that. And actually, I'm already in it. It shouldn't say join the Skype cast. Oh, but it does. I could be in twice. I wonder what that would do. No, never mind. I'm not going to live that dangerously. And that's Dave doing something. Okay, this is Dave Cormier, who's in our Skype cast, of course, from Prince Edward Island, Canada. And he's saying, or you can go here and search, right? That's skypecasts.skype.com/skypecasts, which is kind of redundant, isn't it? /home, which is also redundant. Why? Never mind. But you just wonder, you know. And you could search, or you could. There's a thing that says on now. So you just click that, and there's our Skype cast. It is, and here's Dave saying it is a little redundant. And so you could just join this, and we could actually join TalkBack Skype. I haven't tried to join the Skype cast while Skype casting, but let's leave that for later. So, yeah. And so you can join in the back, and like I say, it's perfectly free. This is the beauty of it. Skype's business model is you offer free services, and then you offer things that some people might be willing to pay for. And the idea is like one person in 10,000, one person in 100,000 will pay for this, right? But that's enough to pay for the company. Skype only has, I forget what the exact number was, but I heard it, the guy from Skype was talking in Britain. He said like 24 employees. Hey, think about that. It's just, no, that's what he said. And I have it on videotape, so. Oh, okay, that wasn't the comment. I don't know what that was. Or maybe it was someone's phone ringing. All right, so now where was I? Okay, so Paint Shop Pro, and again, there's the free editing software. So here's the photo, and I'm just going to note the name of this. So one thing I can do, and again, my website's down, which is really annoying, but I'm going to go www.flickr.com. And again, we'll just wait for this to open up here. And what Flickr is a website that allows you to store your photographs online. Now, you remember I said, you know, when I was in Bogota, I took 900 photographs. You can't do that too many times. Oh, to save bandwidth. Okay, good point. All right, Harold's saying I should mute the people. I didn't think there were. Oh, look at all the people coming in. They're just all late. They missed the beautiful music at the start. Okay, I'm going to mute people, but I'm pretty sure there's a way to... Oh, mute everyone. That works. Okay. Sorry, people. You've all been muted.
The power.
And I assume there's a way that you can tell me if you want to speak, so I'm not going to worry about that. Thanks for the suggestion, Harold. This is Flitter. Okay. And yeah, and there's Harold going, boy. Audio is much better now. Oh, I see. Good. Okay, good. Ah, yeah. If too many people get to speak, then the audio on the other end gets bad. You see, you learn things on the fly, right? So here's Flickr. And what this is, again, this is a site, and it's the same business model, right? They offer you this wonderful service for free. And what this service is a place where you can store your photographs. Because I took 900 photographs of Columbia, and I needed a place to put them. Well, okay, you can't really store that many photographs, but you can store a lot of photographs. So I have these photographs, and this thing's actually sitting on, is it going to find it even? No. Why not? I haven't unplugged my card. Oh, well, hang on. I'll just save this photograph somewhere. Okay, I'm going to make this all easy for myself. I don't normally save stuff on the desktop like this, but I'm just going to save it as plotn.jpg, and I'll save it on the desktop. All right, so I've saved the photograph. Now, I could edit it and put little mustaches on everyone. You don't believe me, eh? So, okay, let's go back to Flickr now. And actually, what I'm going to do is eject that card so I can plug my mouse back in. USB mass storage. Must be this one. And no, of course, it's the other one. Why wouldn't it put the one I just plugged in at the top? Because it's stupid. So usability is everywhere. How did you find the usability at lunch? Was that okay? Do you think about that? Was the flow okay? I went in and I noticed that there were dishes off to one side, and there was food in them, but there was no way to access them because there were no plates. It's okay. I mean, don't feel badly. It was actually much more usable than most of these setups I've ever seen. But you know, you begin to think that way. You think usability. You think, why does the hall make you go there? Anyhow, back. All right, I was going to plug in my mouse. I didn't have to do that. So only two USB ports. I have a little device that plugs into a USB port, and it's like, you know, if somebody grants you a wish, what do? Wish for three more wishes? If somebody gives you a USB port, you put in a little device that gives you three more USB ports. It's the one piece of equipment I didn't bring with me. I didn't think I needed it. Silly. This silly person. All right. So we're back at Flickr, and so I'm going to upload this photo from Flickr. I called it BLOEM something something, didn't I? And where is it? There it is. You see, you can't make those bigger. Okay. And I'm going to hit upload. And now what it's doing is it's uploading this into my Flickr account. And again, Flickr has the same business model as Skype. And they offer this wonderful free service. Okay. Boy, that makes quite a bit of noise, doesn't it? We've got, looks like Amun-Ra or something like that recommending another service or blog or beautiful Bulgaria. Okay. Well, welcome. So we've got someone from Bulgaria. And the website, you remember the question asking earlier, should I blog in my own language? Yes. This is Bulgarian. It looks like, on my screen, it looks like Russian. So it might actually be Russian. I don't know. How's my photo doing here? I have to find it. Okay, I'm going to close that. I got too many screens going here, so. There we go. And it's uploaded. Okay, so those of you who are online, if you go to... oh, wait, let me just save it first. You won't see anything just yet. And it's going to take a second here to save. Actually, it took like half a second to save, and it's going to take, you know, a few minutes to reload the web page, but that's the way it goes. All right, if you go to flickr.com/photos/Stephen_Downs, you'll see the first photo. But if you don't want to go to Flickr, that's okay. So here's my photo. How many people are present at your face-to-face presentation? How many would you say this is? 80-85. So it's a good group. Haven't had too many walkouts. I'm just kidding. So here you go. This now is on the internet. Anyone in the world can access this. Instant fame. Notice I selected the license that I wish to use was an attribution non-commercial. It's a type of Creative Commons license. So automatically, because I set it as a default, when I uploaded the photo, I've also given everybody in the world permission to use my photo in their projects. And there are millions of people doing the same thing. They upload their photos and give me permission to use them in my projects, and sometimes I do. And so I'll just pop into the Flickr main page here. And it should be down here somewhere. I don't know where it is. Sometimes it moves. I'm looking for, here we go, Creative Commons. And when we follow that link, now we're going to be able to search for photographs. How many photographs are there? Well, in the plain attribution license, 2.2 million. I can see you, but it's about 2 hours after the fact. That's, how are you managing that, George? Oh, yeah. You see, when we went for lunch, I realized that I had not actually taken the time to learn how to do a Skype cast. I figured since I was presenting it after lunch, I should take a few minutes and figure out and make sure I knew what I was doing. And I couldn't find a website anywhere, so I sent a message to George Siemens, and he didn't get the message, but he got it now, and figured it out. It turns out it wasn't hard at all. And, you know, I'll just send that and close off George. So here's the Creative Commons. You got... there's way too much sound effect on that. And there are different types of Creative Commons. The attribution, right? You can use it any way you want, commercially, non-commercially, whatever. Just give credit to the photographer, right? Attribution, no derivatives. If you use the photo, you have to use it the way it was taken. I'm in the middle of a talk, and it's really loud when you am me. So, can it? No, I'm just kidding, George. I'll just tell him. I don't need to tell him this talk. He knows better. Right? And you can look these up, but these are different ways of sharing your photographs. And there's like millions of them. And you want to see more? Okay, this will be photos number 1 to 30 of the two, well, okay. So let's pick Bogota. It's a theme. I have no imagination. So suppose I was doing a presentation or say maybe a video on Bogota. Maybe I'm a student or something like that. I come to Flickr and here are photographs I can use for free, completely legally, totally legally. I don't pay anything for them. All of these photographs I can use in my presentation. That is not Bogota. Well, actually, it might be. Yeah, it might be. That looks like Bogota. Yeah, that looks like Bogota. That is Bogota for sure. That's Maserati up there. And that's Maserati again. It's kind of neat. Free photos. And you're not, you don't have to make your photos Creative Commons. You can make it all rights reserved. Nobody can use them. And you still use Flickr. And you can store your photos and keep them private. Nobody can even see them. No problem. But me, being me, I upload my photos. Anyone can see them and Creative Commons. Now, but the Flickr is a little out of the way. This button here says blog this. So what I can do is I can take my photograph, choose a blog below, half an hour, you may remember that blog, and pre-conference, and V-L-O-M, no, that's jet lag, I tell ya. Folks, you're on the internet. And now I'm going to post this. Now, you notice, think about what happened here. I mean, Flickr, which is one application, it's owned by Yahoo. And I've selected the blog this option and picked half an hour. And that's on Blogger, which is owned by Google. Two completely separate companies. Two completely separate websites. But what they've done is they communicate with each other using what are called APIs, Application Program Interfaces. Now I'll visit the blog, and those of you who are listening online, if you visit halfanhour.blogspot.com, you can see a portion of the audience that's here in the room with me, I assume. Yep, there it is. You guys are now blogged. Congratulations. You didn't expect to be blogged when you came here this morning, eh? And that's all there is to it. Now, for my video, what I did, and I don't know of a free way to do this yet. Oh, well, actually, yeah, there's, Microsoft will sort of do it. There's an application that comes with Windows that does it. But I used the Adobe Photoshop Elements. Again, got it at a drugstore. And Make Photo Creation is what I picked. And what this does, I'm not going to go all the way through it, but basically what you do is you select a bunch of photographs that you want, and then, it's not too long. Select a bunch of photographs, make creation launch failed. Yeah, it's been doing that, but what I've discovered, it's a lie. It actually didn't fail, but it won't, but how can I get rid of that? I'm afraid. Remind me next time. What the hell? I lied to it too. I don't want to be reminded next time. But you know what? I don't feel guilty lying to software. I've thought about this. So, okay, I'm hitting the create, but the whole dynamics of doing the webcast too, right? The webcast people can't see the screen. So I'm going to have to address that. No, not tomorrow, but so slideshow is what they call it. So there it is. Now, this is the default, and when it gives you a default, just press OK unless you don't want it. And so now, add media and photos and so on, and here's Bogota, and we're already into, I should have a folder started for Bloemfontein. I don't know, where is it? Oh, different computer. Okay, we'll go to Bogota then. And we pick some pictures. And we say, open. And they open. Now we have a picture. It'll be on the screen for 2 seconds. And then we have another picture. It'll be on the screen for 3 seconds. And another picture. It'll be on the screen for 3 seconds. There are different kinds of transitions I can have here. You may, from the video, you will have noticed I just love that blurred at all. It's really the only transition for me. And then enable pan and zoom. This isn't hard, is it? You can learn this. it takes a bit, you know, because, like, I learned how to do this. I didn't have a course or a program or anything. You know how I learned this? I learned this by trying all the different commands and seeing what happened. That's what I did. That's how people learn software these days. Now, you know what? When people access your courses online or your programs online, that's how they're learning it. If you're sending them a manual, that's holding up the telephone. And unread. They're just logging on and learning how to do it that way. And that's how I did this. So, would you like to save the changes? Well, yeah, I made all these changes. No, I'd really rather just throw them away. Idiot software. The obvious questions. Okay, so here's the thing that I just made. Now what I'm going to do, I right-clicked on it. That took me a while to figure out. Output is WMV. So I'm gonna, there's the change output quality, but meh. You know, I don't mess around. So it's going to be in the My Videos directory. So I'm going to save that. That's going to take a few seconds. This is this rendering is a bit time intensive, so 6%, blah, 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 blah. So, but the point here is, like, look what I can do with my camera and my little card, my Flickr and Blogger and this little piece of software with PaintShop Pro or with Photoshop. I can edit these photos, put little mustaches on them, you know, put, what's his name, Mel Gibson right beside President Bush, whatever, you know, anything. All kinds of things. You know, the whole idea of a photo is what really happened is no longer the case. A photo is whatever you thought. It just changes the whole ontology of it. So we're at 51% rendering here, which is pretty good. It's not taking too long. Hey, you're doing this, you know, you go for a coffee or something like that. No coffee. It's lover.
Back to our conversation this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we're desperately needing is the grammar that underlies the digital vocabulary. Right. All of these tools and they're in all different programs, but students and ourselves need the literacy and grammar that we need, the courses and grammar, so that we can do what you just said, not have to, I mean, realize that you can go to all the commands to learn,
right,
but
they,
we don't
know. But how do you say things with it? And that was, like, with my video, that's the trick, right? Yeah, learning this tech stuff is, actually, it's just time, right? You know, if you're smart, it's a little time. If you're less smart, it's more time. But it's just time, right? Anyone can learn this pretty well, unless you're blind, in which case it's harder. But you can still do it, is the point. But saying something is hard. Saying something is tricky. Oh, it's done. I just want to show you what I created here. You notice I'm doing this just as I'm giving the talk, right? How hard can that be if I'm doing it while I'm giving a talk? So, and there we go. I just made that. That one's not moving. It's supposed to move. Oh, well. Yeah, it did moving a little bit. Not, I was pretty lazy in making it. So there you go. And so in my video now, all I did now is add media from files and folders, and this was in my video. Oops. And my videos. And there it is. So I made it, and I just drag it in, and now it's in my video, and now I'll play it. The sound from before, right? And now we're going to sort of blocked out the sound, and there's the thing that I just made. And I could have put the picture that I just took in, and it would have taken the same thing. I haven't forgotten your question. I am going to come to it. But it's a hard question. And frankly, I don't think there is a grammar yet. Sorry. I don't think there is a grammar yet. I think that it's something that's still being made up. I did write a paper once called The New Literacy. See, because I liked the way you asked the question. Again, you've been reading ahead. Think about how you learned to communicate when you grew up, right? You went to school, and if you wanted to give a message to somebody, you wrote it out, right? Or you might say something to them, but you'd write it out typically. You'd write it out. And your message, therefore, would consist of words and sentences, right? And that's how it was done. And the words and the sentences had meanings. They had some sort of signification. And what you were probably taught is that everyone that speaks the same language means the same thing. If I use the word bottle, I mean one of these. And if you use the word bottle, you mean one of these. Well, it's not so simple as that. We used to think it is, but it's not so simple as that. I've been reading Derrida, and my thoughts are going to change a little bit over time, but still. It turns out that when I say the word bottle and you say the word bottle, we actually mean different things. Not dramatically different things. It overlaps enough we can probably get by, right? You know, I say to somebody, get me a bottle, and they bring me one of these. Or they bring me a bottle of wine or a bottle of beer or whatever, right? The thing is, this corresponds not to, or the word bottle corresponds not to this, but to a set of associations in my head. Remember? Learning, neurons joining together. That's all it is, right? The concept bottle, a bunch of neurons joining together. Okay. But the problem is, remember, experience makes the neurons join together. Well, who here has had the same experience as I have? None of you. Look at your neighbor. Have you had the same experiences as the person sitting beside you? No. Every person's experiences are unique. Well, yeah, there's overlap. We're all looking at a bottle right now, except the people sleeping in the back row, who will have no experiences of this. I'm just kidding. But, you know, there's an overlap. But when I say the word bottle, what comes to my mind is all the connections in my mind from all the experiences of bottles I've ever had. And believe me, my experiences with bottles, they're unique. Let that sink in for a bit. You see, that's why telling jokes is so risky, right? Some people, they've had enough experiences, they get the joke. Other people, they've had different experiences, they don't get the joke. And other people, they've had even different experiences, and they would like to throw you out of the room now. Right? The same sentence means different things to different people. Pardon? Well, this is... Well, yeah, you see, it's not even like, if you think about what a grammar is, all right, the whole idea is the meaning of words is always the same, and that grammar, everybody uses the words in the same way, but we know that that's not true either, all right? People use words differently. They'll come to you, and they'll come to you in school, and they'll say, here are the rules of grammar, and you sit there and you go, well, yeah, sure, but why? And they don't have an answer. It's just everyone does. What's happening is they're not teaching you the rules of grammar. They're trying to say, you will speak this way. See the difference? But now all bets are off because the people now who have the capacity to create this new content, like I just did here, they're not using words anymore. And so nobody can come to them and say, you must use this grammar. Now, there are grammars of photography, grammars of images. I've forgotten her name, but she spoke with me in the same conference when I was in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, about 6 months ago. So you can look that up if anyone cares. And she's a specialist in images and design. She says there's a grammar of images. If you do not have the grammar, how do you judge the quality of the learning experience? Okay. Well, again, you guys just saw a video, right? I did not, well, I used some words, but mostly I used music and images and video, and there was not a grammar, but I tried to create my meaning by layering these things together. And what I was doing is layering these different images and sounds together in a way that I thought represented what was in my mind. And I knew that it would be met by each of you differently, because you've had different experiences. Right? You know, you saw the tram ride, and I have a certain experience of that, you have a different experience. So, because of that, there is not going to be, nor should there be, some sort of code of quality or list of the things that you have to do. There can be guidelines or recommendations, but really, as a learner, you will learn by having somebody model and demonstrate it for you. And you'll say, you'll try to be like that person until you develop your own style. So, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't work. Not every teacher matches every student. Believe me, I've had some teachers that did not match me and vice versa. Poor old Mrs. Bujinski. She had me 2 years in a row, grade 2 and grade 3. And then she retired. yeah, never did hear from her again. we got Dave Cormier contributing. Quality is, by its nature, qualitative. We can only really tell a story about how valuable an experience is. And he says more, but it goes off the screen. But it'll be here somewhere, maybe? No. I don't know where the rest of your comment went, Dave. Sorry about that. See, this is the sort of, here it is. This is the sort of thing you would learn doing psychcasts, you know, when people make. In order to make a number out of it, you have to artificially make it quantitative. That sounds like the Derrida I know. At that point, you're judging all experiences from the point of view of the teacher, not the learner. Exactly. But this is the internet. This is new. The power is evened, right? There is no arbiter of quality. There are no rules. So how do we know? Well, I'm going to tell you a story. There's a lot of stories. I don't usually do the story thing. But, yeah, well, whatever. Every talk is different. I was at a conference in Toronto called Idea City. And one of my favorite musicians was at this conference. And she wasn't one of my favorite musicians at the time, but she became one of my favorite musicians after the conference. And I'm just zipping through here as fast as I can, fast as my little mouse can take me. but the problem is I can't read. And I don't see her. Other computer. Oh well, you don't get to hear her. That's too bad. So I'll play you a little Neil Young instead. No, I'm just kidding. The musician's name is Nico Case, and she was actually born in Seattle. She got her musical training in Vancouver. I think she was born in Virginia, that's right. She was born in Virginia and got her musical training and grew up in Vancouver and in Seattle, and now she just tours all over the place. And, oh right, I'm recording, I can't do that. Okay, if you're listening, I'm going to stop this. I don't have enough of these. That's too bad. Okay, I'm saving that. You'll hear it eventually anyways, because I want to make it happen, but... And I'm stubborn now. Anyhow, she's at, and they invite her to this academic conference, right? And this young musician comes on, and, you know, she's standing in front of an audience of, like, you know, I don't know, 1,000 people. I thought it was 300 people. Anyway. Packed room. Just jam-packed. Every seat was full. And she's terrified. But what her project was, and I thought it was pretty neat, was she was going to record a song. And she was going to do it, and you see where I get some of my ideas, right? You know, I steal them. she was going to do it in front of that audience. And so what she did is they had already laid down the music track, so there's some background music. And so then she sang her bit, and then she said, "And I want all of you to be in it too." And at which point we began to get very nervous, because not only were we going to have to sing, it was going to be recorded, and it was going to be on one of her albums. And if you've ever heard me sing, you would have just one word for me: don't. But she knew this, right? And these Eye Rivers, great concept, really rotten slider. Oh, awful, just awful. You can't use them. Of course, soaking them doesn't help. This Eye River has been in the bottom of a muddy pond in the river in the middle of nowhere. I guess it still works, so I guess that's not so bad. And what she said is, if you sing by yourself, it sounds awful. Well, some people sound good, but most people think it sounds awful. But if everybody sings, and they try to be on stage, but they don't worry about how it sounds, they just do their own thing, it comes out perfect. Every time. No exception. And then she proved it. And this is the song. Or would be if I had volume. I don't know why I'm not getting sound. On. Plugged in? Maybe it's not plugged in right. Hope all you Skype cast people are getting this. Some of you liked it. Some of you hated it. Some people walked out. No, I'm just kidding. I think they had to go. that's not actually better. But each one of you had an experience of that video. Now, that means you have all in some way evaluated it in your own mind. That video either connected with your previous experiences and said something to you, highlighted some experiences, created some new connections or whatever, or it didn't, or anywhere in between. And each experience was unique, and I can't control that because I can't control your experiences, and it would be stupid to try. Nor can I say my experience of the video is how you should experience it. I look at that video, I cry. Oh, okay, not really, but I get a little teary. Right, and I looked at this room, and you know, every eye was dry. There were no tears. You experience it differently, but that's, you know, that's how human brains work. And so you each take away your impression, and the larger the crowd is, the more impressions there are, and each individual impression is idiosyncratic. Like it, don't like it, whatever. But together, each person doing their own evaluation their own way, together, they come up with the appropriate evaluation. And you say, how could this possibly work? Well, I mean, there are different experiments in this. Here's a site you may have seen. It was a slightly different topic, but it's the same sort of thing. It's called wikipedia.com. Now, it'll take a few seconds to load here. Oh, right, we're in South Africa. We get a choice. Although, none of your languages, except... You have to go look for it, but... Who'll agree to do English? No, I'm just kidding. There's no agreement there. I'll end up doing it, because it's my talk, and I can get away with that. That's the thing, too, like, you know, student-driven and student-centered and all that. But the thing is, you know, equity of power is equity of power. I have power, too. If I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And the thing is, what makes a talk like this worthwhile is you can get up and leave. Think about that. Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. It is created using a type of software called a wiki. Now, you remember the wiki. We had the one that wasn't working for me earlier, the JotSpot wiki, downs.jot.com. This is the same sort of concept. And the idea of a Wikipedia is anybody can edit it. Here's a page on Steve Irwin. And I'm just, oh right, I have a mouse again. I was just looking for the little thing that says, edit this page. Oh, due to recent vandalism, okay, anonymous or newly registered users. Okay, let's go to, why are people vandalizing Steve Irwin? That's not good. Anyhow, so let's go to Australian. We'll vandalize that. All right, so edit this page. Actually, Wikipedia has been pulling back on this. I think they're wrong to do that, personally. Okay, so here I am now. I'm in a page editor. And, okay, native name, all of that sort of stuff, right? Now, after a while, I mean, this will get annoying to Wikipedia, so I have to, like, fake it. But, okay, why am I getting weird stuff here? Yeah, edit this page, okay. Yeah, I already saw that. You don't need to tell me that again. All right, so what I'm going to do is, what should I say about Australians? In the rugby. And who are they playing? How's that? I don't know if you call them the box, but I would. And I'm the one vandalizing the site. So now what I'm doing is save this page. So, and the thing is, typically anybody can edit a Wikipedia page. And they can put in information that is true. They can put in information that is false. Here it is. I've even misspelled rule. That's pretty funny. And you might think, how could this possibly work? But Wikipedia... Okay. Okay, yeah, there's Joke from Australia. Oops. And, oh yeah, those of you who are in the... I need to mute Joke. I could have ejected her. Okay. Yeah. Funny. That's pretty good, right? Bulgaria, Australia, Canada, South Africa. So how many continents is that? How about before? Yeah. So then three. So now, okay, let's see how our Wikipedia page looks now. It's been what, a minute or so since I made the change? Fixed. Just like that. And I'm sure that wasn't one of the people elsewhere. I've done this demonstration like a dozen times, and eventually they're going to ban me from Wikipedia. But until then, actually it's a different IP each time, so I'm like, how can they track? Well, right, I have a username. But I'm logged in anonymously. All right. So, the thing is, it's like the song. Wikipedia is an encyclopedia not written by experts, but written by everyone. And people see things different ways. People see Australia different ways. People see Australia as the opponent in rugby. People see Australia as the land down under. People see Australia as the home of Steve Irwin, etc. Right? And all the things that people have to say about Australia, good or bad, get put into this article. But anybody can edit. And over time, you get something like a very neutral, because if you say anything controversial, somebody else is going to delete it, right? But pretty factual, very factual. In fact, there was a study by Nature, which is a famous journal, Nature Scientific Journal. They compared Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica in a study a bit less than a year ago, and found that in terms of quality, they are roughly the same. But in terms of currency, Encyclopedia Britannica doesn't have an entry, first of all. But even if it had an entry, it wouldn't have a death date, because he died yesterday. Wikipedia had it within moments of his death, which is kind of morbid when you think about it, but still. And you'll see some articles in that. There were hundreds, thousands of edits to the Steve Irwin article after he died. And all the people wanted to make sure that the biographical article was complete and accurate. And the mass of people invariably get it right. Invariably. And this isn't just being made up. James Sirica wrote a book called The Wisdom of Crowds, where he tries to get at this sort of analysis. It's the sort of thing, if I asked any individual to guess the temperature of this room, they'd be plus or minus 10 degrees. If I asked everybody individually to take a guess and write it down on a piece of paper, so you're not influencing each other too much, you'd get it within a degree. Even though everybody has a different perception of temperature. Go figure. And when you take this sort of thing and then you put it into a network, when you put it into an environment where people can communicate back and forth, you can create things like Wikipedia. Or, remember before, I was talking about how people learn, I talked about communities of practice. It's the same sort of thing. The community of people who are interested in economics will lead and show how economics should be learned, practiced, studied, and they will do that by contributing blog posts, photographs, pieces of software, whatever they do. I don't know what economists do. I think crystal ball broken. you know what I mean? And you can analyze this, and people have analyzed this mathematically. And what would it take for an idea, a concept, to spread through a society? What would it take
for something to be thought of as good through a society. And we're all connected, like neurons in the brain. We're all connected. And there's a mathematics, right? Suppose I have an idea in my head, and I say it, I can't read it, say it to Cecilia, and I say, Steve Irwin is great. Now, either she'll believe me or she doesn't. Either she'll tell me or tell someone else or she won't. All right? So there's going to be a probability that she'll tell Lizette. All right? If the probability is, on average, is greater than 1, then the thought, Steve Irwin is great, will spread through society. If the probability is less than 1, then it won't. But it'll spread a little bit, right? Because if I tell enough people Steve Irwin was great, you know, it should spread a little bit, right? But unless Steve Irwin really was great, it's not going to spread through society. Ebola virus. You've heard of the Ebola virus. Broke out in the Congo. And luckily it was in a small town, but, you know, these sorts of things too, right? I'm sick, I have a virus. I come into contact with Cecilia. She either catches the disease or not from me. And then she comes into contact with the next person, either passes it on or doesn't. If the probability is greater than 1 that that happens, the disease spreads through society. If the probability is less than 1, it doesn't. So what's the secret of disease control? Get that probability down. Now, the networks are not evenly distributed, but networks that are evenly distributed will more likely spread this information or not according to the actual value of the information. What do I mean by that? There's different kinds of networks. Think of a television network. And a television network is not evenly distributed, right? Someone owns a television network, and they have all the say, and then there's a whole bunch of people, they receive the signal, they don't have any say at all. All they can do is listen, right? That's a very unbalanced network. And that means that you can force the probability above 0 even if the message is a bad message. That's propaganda. It's advertising, right? In a perfectly distributed network, then the messages will only go out at a certain rate. But the thing is, we don't want things going out willy-nilly through society. And what tends to happen is we get a type of network that's like the airline system, a spoken hub type of network, where there are clusters, like communities. And these communities are connected by what are called bridges, people who span different communities, somebody who's interested not only in economics, but also raising horses. And that person links those two communities. So you'll have an uneven, not totally uneven, but an uneven distribution. Now, the less uneven it is, the better. The more uneven it is, the worse, because the more uneven it is, the more likely false messages will be spread. The more likely bad e-learning resources will be distributed in schools. So, but you look at this network, and if you have this network, and if this network is reasonably equitable so that all people have a say, and the difference between the people who have more say and less say is not so big, then that kind of network will ensure quality. That's why the journal system in the sciences was so important. There was a time in the sciences there were no journals. And so you would listen to the expert. And, you know, only one or two people would have the say about what is true and what is false in this science. But when the journals came out, it made the possibility of writing an article and publishing it much greater for the average scientist. And so there were more people had the say, and consequently, there were more connections, a more equitable distribution, and it was more likely we would get accurate results. And, you know, and the thing is, it's not a political principle, it's a mathematical principle.
And you can accept it or reject it, like any principle. And you can tweak around these networks and say, this is a good network, this is a bad network, you know. And everybody makes their own decisions. So, I've looked at this myself. I looked at this quite a bit, because out there on the internet, if you look up a phenomenon called the long tail, what happens is, when your networks are uneven, right, Chris Anderson wrote a book, books are not balanced, because very few people get to publish books. Right, here's the picture I was looking for. Right, this is an uneven network. What this represents is the red is the small group of people who are able to talk to lots of people. Right, sometimes thought of, you know, they're the A-listers, they're the broadcasters, they're the people with thousands of listeners. And then there's all the rest of everybody. Now, the television network, there is no yellow, because people can't just start up their own television station. It's only the elite power players, right? In the blogosphere, what they're trying to tell us now, you notice I say trying, is that naturally, just naturally, there will be an elite, and there will be a long tail of all the rest of us. And the elite will speak to hundreds of thousands of people, and the long tail people will speak to, like, well, their uncle. And that's it. I don't buy that. Again, by that mathematics, the shorter that long tail, the shorter that big spike, the red part, and the thicker that long tail, the more individuals get to communicate and share with each other, the more accurate information will be passed through the network. Because it's harder to propagandize. It's, you know, you don't have that advantage for a message initially. A message has to make it on its own merits and not be pushed out to society by just massive access. So, I've looked at this, and I've asked myself, okay, so, man, you like this kind of network, you don't like that kind of network. All right, good for you. How do you get one of these and not one of those? Because you have all of these people in the blogosphere, they're saying, well, this one's natural. And, yeah, right, it's natural, right? So, sure, it's natural that someone has $1 billion, another one has $2. Yeah, that's natural. Big spike, right? Same thing, same curve, same phenomenon, same laws of mathematics, which are actually not captured in economics. Bugs me. That's why it's weird. I'm just kidding. It is captured in some economics. But the thing is, it's not natural. I mean, it is natural that we have this power law, but the height of the spike varies quite a bit. Another place you see the power law is in a tree. You think, what? Well, think about it. Think about a tree, right? Think about each part of the tree as one separate thing. So you have the trunk, that's one part of the tree, and then there's two limbs that branch off, that's two more parts, and then they branch off, that's two more parts, you see what I mean? So you look at a tree, you've got one thing that's really big, and 8 million things that are this big, right? The big trunk, the long branches, right, or the many branches, or whatever. Only one, and the trunk is connected to everything, right? As the trunk goes, so goes the tree. Not really particularly stable. If you're a tree, take out the trunk, you've taken out the whole tree. So, you know, trees cannot survive axes. If trees were better designed, you'd need a wood chipper. Okay. That's the extent of my knowledge of forestry. But the thing is, the power law that these blogosphere people talk about, they talk about one person with a million links and another person with two. That's a million to two ratio. Right? And you get certain economists who say it's natural for a person to have $1 million and another person to have $2, right? A million to two ratio. You look at trees, how many trees have you seen have a trunk a million times the size of its smallest branch? Not a one. Zero. I dare you to find one. You will never find one. The biggest trunk in a tree is only maybe 100 times bigger than the smallest branch. There is a power law in nature, but it's not unrestrained. right? A tree can have a trunk that's only so big, right? Branches can only get so small. If your branches were too small, they couldn't support the tree, right? If your trunk was too big, it'd be all trunk, no branch, right? You know, that's not a good tree. That's, well, a rock. Okay, not a rock, but you know what I mean. Airports is another example of one of these networks. And again, though, there is not an airport in the world that has a million times more flights per day than the smallest airport. The smallest airport in the world might have, what, one flight. I don't think there is an airport that could possibly conceive of having a million flights a day. Why? Well, because if you put a million airplanes in an airport, the advantage of the airport is lost. Ooh, we're getting bleep bleep. Mohammed is calling me. Okay, he wants to speak. Okay. I think. And please, oh, he's separate. I'm being spammed during my Skype cast. Oh, okay. English is through his contact deal. Let's find out about Mohammed. Mohammed doesn't know that he's from Cairo, and he's 40, he's male, and he's not going to give us any information. It's bad timing, Mohammed. Okay, but I'll decide that all later. Okay, sorry. These things happen. When you're in instant communication with Cairo and you're giving a Skype cast, it can happen. There's a natural limitation to the size of airports. You cannot put a million planes in an airport. Planes are too big, right? If you put a million planes in an airport, airports would cease to be useful, and they would begin to be very, very dangerous. So people say it's natural to have $1 million. It's natural to have a million planes. Well, it's not natural. The only thing that makes it natural is the fact that it's not natural. There are no natural limitations. It's all artificial. So, okay, in nature there are these limitations. In nature we get networks that work. We get forests. We get crickets that communicate with each other. Diseases succeed in spreading. Well, for a disease, that counts as working. You know, for us, yeah, less so. Right? So, what are the properties of the networks that work compared to these scale-free networks where you just go off the map? I've come up with four. I'm not wedded to these, but I think these are pretty much right. And, you know, you heard me talking about some things earlier today. A lot of these things are based on these four values. Four properties. The way of building a network. First property, autonomy. Each individual in the network makes its own decision. No part of the network tells another part of the network what to do. You look at the human brain, no neuron tells another neuron what to do. If your neurons worked that way, your brain wouldn't work. Because your brain would only be as smart as the smartest neuron, which is really stupid. Right? Society is the same thing, right? Society, you know, if you're only as smart in a society as the smartest person in your society, that's not very smart. Because even the smartest person in society isn't as smart as a network. Not even close, actually. You know, you can have people in society that's Stephen Hawking, really smart, right? But, you know, I mean, get Stephen Hawking doing stuff like, urban geography, or, you know, I was gonna say football, but that's not fair. But urban geography, like an intellectual thing outside his area of expertise. He's just average. Bill Gates, right? Bill Gates, very smart guy, but put him in an ethics class, average. I couldn't resist that one. That was good. That was there, right? Autonomy, right? In a network, in a functioning network, each entity operates individually. That doesn't mean with, you know, with no information whatsoever, but they make their own decisions. Just like when I played the video, you decided whether you liked it or not, you decided whether you liked it or not, and so on. Each of you made that decision individually. Now, yeah, you might have talked about it in a room. I kind of hope you did, but who knows, right? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but you made up your own mind. So that's first, autonomy.
The second is openness.
That's why I promote open source software. That's why I promote Creative Commons content. By openness, I have to remember, I have to get this right. It's silly. It's my own principle, but I forget it. Right. By openness, I've actually represented this in various ways, but that's okay. Anyone can contribute content to the network. Right? There's no closed, there's no barriers. Right? And anyone can receive content from the network. That's why I hate logins. Login, if you hit a login instead of a page, it's a broken part of the network. Right? In the human brain, when one neuron cannot send a signal properly to another neuron, we call that Alzheimer's disease. That's true. Right? That is what Alzheimer's is. The neurons cannot signal each other. No. It's equality only in the sense that everyone can contribute. Right? No more, no less. Right? I'm not bringing in any other concept, but the idea here is anyone can create and contribute. And the rest of society can go, ew, we hate that, right? Or whatever. But the idea is anyone can get information. I talk about a right to an education and things like that. That's part of that, where you can draw from the network. You can get information from the network, and you can put information in. But I wouldn't represent it as equality per se. Equality on this picture, equality would be that line is completely flat, right? Instead of curved like that. That's not necessarily a good way to be. It's not necessarily a bad way to be. If society as a whole decides that's the way to go, then that's the way it'll go. But what I'm saying is more equal tends to be better than really unequal, just in terms of getting accurate, good information to pass through the network. So I would say openness promotes equality, but is not the same as equality. So that's the second one. Openness, not just content. Openness means being able to use, well, in computers, your own software. You use Windows, you use Linux, even Mac if you want. Openness means using your own language. It means saving your file in your own format. You're not locked in or forced to use a certain type of software or to speak a certain language or to read certain content or whatever. I mean, openness is choice, in the sense of being able to use all these different devices to get in and out of the internet. Openness is like Google and Yahoo talking to each other. Accessibility falls under openness. Now, there are people who argue, and they make generally economic arguments, and generally arguments that I think are flawed, on the basis of closed or restricted access. And that's fine. I mean, they should be able to make those arguments. But I'm going to stand up here, and I'm going to argue against them on the basis, not on morality or anything like that, but on the argument that with closed access, society as a whole is more stupid. You make the call. And I can prove it. I can prove that closed access makes people more stupid because you don't have the information you need. It's not a hard case to make. But, I'm expressing it like kind of roughly or brusquely and not with academic finesse, because I want to express that principle in as blunt a way as possible. And if I go write a paper or something, dress it up and use longer words or whatever, or words that I've never even learned, but you can do that. You can find anything on the internet.
We are now in the business of education now. This whole topic of open education resources.
Right.
He's now very active this month as you know. But the whole issue of copyright. I know you explained the copyright idea of the photos and make available or whatever. But now a lecturer starts to compile his blog with, you know, learning materials.
Yeah.
I students in Kimberley about 300 people doctor, 150 kilometers here from off campus, they download that blog.
Sure.
But I'm selling it to that client. That student is a client of this university.
Why are you selling it?
In the sense that he's buying my service, he's a client of this new team.
Okay.
However, he cannot resell that. He can only use that academic purpose.
All right.
But this whole thing of plagiarism, of copyright, it's not so easy in South Africa.
Of course, it's not so easy anywhere. But here's my response, and I've said this in Canada, I've said that they really don't like it in the States, but you tell me a story like that, right, you know, and I can't have open content because I'm selling content. Well, what I sit here and I hear that, and I say, okay, I see what's happening. Your business model is preventing poor people from accessing knowledge. Is that right? Is that what you want to defend? And once you realize, particularly it's information. Right. The only thing stopping the information from going from here to Kimberley is some guy standing in a road blocking it, and that's how he makes his money. You know? Who's the pirate? I wrote a paper, Copyright Ethics and Theft. And in my view, and I made the argument, and I have yet to see this argument refuted, the people who are the thieves are the publishers. The people who are the thieves are the people who make their livings by blocking access to content to poor people. Where's the honor in that? So that's my response. And then over and above that, if you allow that, society as a whole doesn't have the knowledge, the skills, and the expertise that it could. So not only are you making poor people poorer, you're hurting all of society. Why? Because you want to sell some content. Why? Because your university salary isn't good enough? So, and like I say, you know, I argue this, and I don't see the answer.
I think we must remember that we are selling content. We are producing a product. And that product, whether it's a doctor, an economic person, or somebody that's in math, we are producing a product. And the South African government, the subsidies to higher education are minimal. And that's why we need student fees. Now, all higher education institutes in South Africa are busy transforming to become more community with community programs and that. And if you say that there's a responsibility on the university to reach out to the community and have a development program or contribute to the community, that's fine. But if we are arguing about producing a doctor, I think there are certain ways, and that's not the university itself. Institutions and body government themselves say that we need to produce this.
It's the same argument as in the classroom, except we've moved it up a level, right? Instead of the teacher telling the student what to do, we have the government telling the teacher what to do. It's the same argument, right? If I'm in government, they will never let me be in government. Because I'm not like big enough spike, but if I were in government, I'm looking at the university comes along and says, well, yeah, but we need to charge these fees in order to survive. I'm sort of sitting there saying, well, okay, now what is the downside of losing the universities? Right? And because people will still want to be doctors, and if what the university is doing is actually preventing people from being doctors, that's not good, right? And another thing, right, and I will sort of go a little bit,
it's very hard for me, particularly these principles that I just talked about, right? You know, like autonomy, right off the bat. It's really hard for me to think of people as products. And it's hard for me to think of the government and you know, as producing doctors. Right? And they have the same mentality in Canada, too, right? It's like you dial up the university. Yeah. We want 10,000 call center clerks, please, and the university says, right, we'll put a program on right away. Right? But who is the client, really? Who is the university supposed to serve, originally and ever?
The community.
The community. So why are you taking your orders from the government?
I think the problem is we still see universities as places where we sell information.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not selling the information, we're selling the qualification.
And you shouldn't even be doing that. Launder argument.
If people access to the information, doesn't necessarily mean that people won't want the qualification. To get that little piece of paper, you still need to go to university. It doesn't mean you can't have the access to the information. Of course, you're going to get it if you really want. You can get it in the library here. Okay?
Sure. But, I mean, now, if universities are selling qualification, what distinguishes university from Acme Testing Services? You see, the university, any educational institution, what they ought to be in the business of is helping people learn. Remember the fax machine? All right? Universities right now are trying to sell, you know, electronic postal services. And people are there saying, I want to send my own faxes. Universities right now are selling electronic courses. And people out there are saying, I want to make my own courses. Right? And it turns out, you know, I mean, like, as long as the fax was in the domain and owned by these courier companies, most people could not afford to send the fax. But as soon as the fax became available to all the people, the fax became the price of a phone call. There were faxes everywhere, all over the place. You couldn't get away from them. Right? Just too many faxes. And then you got fax spam. I thought it was someone who annoyed me to send a fax document, right? You put feed the fax document through, and it rolls back, and then you tape it. No one with a fax machine ever... I'm just kidding. Sometimes you lead by example. So, you know, I mean, and that's like... It's not offering a product anymore. It's, you know, universities are not offering a product anymore. They're not even offering a service anymore. What they're doing, what they ought to be doing, is putting into place the resources and supports that allow people to do the things that they want to do, and specifically to allow to learn the things that they want to learn. Right? It's creating the environment, the supportive environment, rather than doing things for people, or worse, rather than telling people what to do. Mm-hmm. It's a different mindset. Yeah.
Sorry, I started to recall the model in New Brunswick, that there was a sort of a merger between the government, you know, asking how many provinces to go, have you got 9 or 15, 13? New Brunswick is one of the how many provinces?
Or
in Canada. In any case, the provincial government, in my terms now, and your university system sort of merged to make this IT sort of an industry and an export industry to generate, say, you know...
Yeah, we had a change in government.
Income, yeah.
So that's been less emphasized recently, but yes, that was a strategy. And overall, for New Brunswick, it was a successful strategy.
Yeah.
New Brunswick was one of Canada's poorest provinces. Newfoundland is always Canada's poorest province, but New Brunswick was close. Massive unemployment, all of that. And what the government did is they said, we're going to spend money on infrastructure. They built the fiber. They couldn't afford this, right? But they did it anyways. And they built, you know, a fiber backbone network connecting all of the communities, all of the schools, all of the universities. They gave people tax breaks if they bought computers. Think about that. Isn't that law? They created special programs to help people learn about the internet, because, you know, it was 10 years ago. It's all pretty new to people still. And those sorts of things. They gave incentives to companies.
that were information-based companies rather than resource-based companies. And so basically, what they did is they put into place the conditions for the development of an information economy. And it has, in fact, worked. It took 10 years for it to work. Right? So the current government, they tried to put a toll on a highway. You don't put a toll on a highway. Funny how you don't put a toll on a highway, but you can charge for bus. But we'll leave that aside. They tried to put a toll on a highway, and they got booted out. You just don't put a toll on a highway in Canada. Yeah? Oh, man. You put tolls on highways? Your highway system is broken. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I'm not. The Americans do it, too, and I couldn't say that their system is broken, could I?
Another thing that we quite often hear and debate quite extensively is the rest of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel that we have contributed to the education of Africa. But most of the higher education institutions would like to contribute in a way that the people that go back to the countries do have a paper that says that these skills were acquired.
Right.
That's why we want to have quality assurance of the academic program. That's why we want to judge content. Any take on that?
Well, I mean, by the argument I've just given, that's not the best way to do it, right? Evaluating people is harder, okay? It's a more complicated argument to give, but the mechanism, the principle are the same. And there's a movement out there that's dedicated to e-portfolios and things like this. So rather than a test-based type of assessment, it's rather, a presentation type of assessment. If you think about a person who becomes a successful writer, for example, they become a successful writer not because they passed a test. No successful writer has ever been that way because they passed a test. Right? Hemingway, no test. Herman Melville, no test. Charles Dickens probably would have failed. I don't like Dickens. Right? So how'd they become famous writers? Right? They put their writing out there and society decided, for better or worse. Right. And to a large degree, that's how the qualifications will be demonstrated as well. Computer programmers do it now. If you write good computer code, it doesn't matter if you have grade 5. You're hired because you write good computer code and the whole world can see it. Right? Now, some things are harder to demonstrate. Brain surgery. Hard to demonstrate, right? Because your failures aren't walking around. Right? So there are going to be cases where the demonstration of your abilities is going to take place in a simulated environment rather than in a real environment, although there'll be a lot of crossovers. It's like airline pilots, right? We don't want to learn that an airline pilot is a bad pilot by counting the number of planes he's crashed. Just bad plan to do that. And besides that, usually that number is one. So so they're all like pretty much even. Right? But what we do is we put them in simulators. And that's pretty easy to tell. And like any place, and you wouldn't test an airline pilot, you put them in a simulator. And if Air Canada is hiring a pilot, Air Canada can hire a pilot from anywhere in the world. They run the pilot through the Air Canada simulators. Can you fly airplanes? And we got... Hello? Yeah. Okay, I mean, online means online. It's interesting. I wonder, we were losing people in our Skype cast. And because the timing elsewhere, like the timing in North America is pretty bad. And Australia, I think, I think it's kind of late in Australia. But we still have people, which is nice, including someone called PHP Codes. Cool. And what do we got now? What's this podcast? yeah. saying, what's this podcast about? What's this podcast about? This is actually a Skype cast. It's about e-learning, I guess. I don't know. Paul, can you hear us? If you can hear us, send me a message. Otherwise, I'm going to have to move on to a different topic. Demonstrate by performance. yeah, you hear us. Okay, good. And you must have just joined. Look, we've been at this for an hour and a half, so I can't really cover all of the ground, Paul, but basically it's using the internet in order to provide learning services online. And that's the nutshell. Basically what I'm talking about are the mechanisms and principles which produce an efficient network for the distribution of learning resources. And so that's where it is. And he's going to take it. That's enough. No more. Stop now. I'm just kidding. So, where was I? Yeah. And that's where the trend is going. In Canada, we have a thing called PLAR, Prior Learning and Assessment Reviews. And so, again, it's demonstrating your knowledge by performance rather than certification. And as that begins to take hold more and more, now think about this, those of you who are in universities that exist only because you're certification agencies, right? If now people can demonstrate that they know rather than having a piece of paper, they don't need you so much anymore because they don't need the degree anymore. They're going to get a high-paying job whether or not they have a degree. All they need to do is prove they have the knowledge. And they can prove they have the knowledge by succeeding in a simulator or putting up a blog. A blog is a way for people to demonstrate that they're smart. Never thought of that. But it's true. How do you think I'm here, right? It's not like I'm qualified, right? But, you know, I've done work, I do things, I show what I can do, right? And my theories are open and out there for anyone to criticize. I don't put them in journals because journals, only university professors can read them and they don't care. No, I shouldn't say that. But really, I mean, well, they don't. What I meant is they don't care about my theories because they have their own theories that they're working with, and you know, and it's their community. But I can write and put it out in the public, and then the public decides. And if the public doesn't like what I do, then I go back to working at 7-Eleven, and that's cool. That's the way it should be. Because I wasn't cut out to be a lecturer or a researcher or whatever. But if I'm good at it, does it matter whether or not I have the degree? And all of a sudden, you ask that kind of question, you begin to question, well, why are we evaluating people with tests and degrees? Right? We used to have to do this because we didn't have a worldwide communications network. But now we do. So we don't need these tests anymore. Just put your stuff online. Or go to the online simulator. Or cast your fishing rod. The fishing rod will know if you can fish or not and whether you should get that fishing job. You know what I mean? So it's like that. Autonomy and openness. Third principle, diversity. If you think about it, you can't really have a brain unless your neurons are doing different things. And each neuron has its own specialization. And each neuron is connected to different neurons. If they were all the same, your brain would be a hunk of lead. That's what a hunk of lead is. A hunk of lead is a bunch of things. All of them are the same. Lead atoms. You know, it could be a hunk of gold, too. They're all gold atoms. In order to get intelligence, you have to have diversity. There's no way around it. Because you have to have the possibility of making different choices. If everybody makes the same choice, if you've made the wrong choice, you're dead. Or you're a hunk of lead, one or the other. So you have diversity. And different, and you know, socially, you have different ways of life, different cultures, different languages. Educationally, you have different ways of learning, different learning styles. Some people learn visually, others learn by listening, whatever. Diversity, difference in function. Some people are economists. Some people are lawyers. We don't know why, but they are. You know, some people prefer geography. Other people, my brother loves driving truck. Loves it. Everybody does what interests them.
And in this diversity, you create or you fulfill all the functions that you need in your society.
You're hearing Stephen Downs. Okay.
I hope that answered that question. My website, if it's up, is www.downes.ca.
Merge a system, an educational system, that comes from the industrial theory, and we in a technological theory now, and we're trying to merge these things.
Right.
Instead of perhaps thinking, creatively thinking new about these types of things. Because a merger seems like a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit with old assessment theories and things that you've got to address, on the one hand, on the other hand, you want to go via the e-learning way.
Right.
These things just clash in some ways. So
in
that, I think, is a little bit of a problem.
In the industrial model, diversity was not value. Because in a Ford plant, you do not want diversity. You know, call those unionists. No, I'm kidding. But really, I mean, it's an industrial line, right? You don't want diversity. You want somebody to come in and do that, put that nut on or whatever. You want them to learn. You want them all to show up at the same time. Punctuality. Right? Because the production line has to flow. But in a post-industrial era, it doesn't work that way anymore. And in post-industrial era, you can be very specific in your provision of services. Imagine, for example, just imagine, this is my retirement plan, because they're going to spend my pension. I don't trust them at all. I will have no money when I retire. And I'll owe money, because I still haven't paid off my student loans. I think I'm kidding. Last I heard, it was $47,000 in climbing. My retirement plan is, because I won't be that mobile, probably, but I'll be online, and I'll be a professor, right? I won't be affiliated with the university. I'll charge by the hour, and you know, I'll do Skype casts or whatever, right? I'll go online. Somebody needs my advice for something, right? I'll say fine. A certain amount of time, a certain amount of money per hour, right? Now that's not copyright or anything like that, right? Once I give the advice, you do whatever you want with it. Share it with the world. Right, but what you're buying is that amount of my services at that point in time, that amount of my labor, right? So, do I have to be at work at 9? Well, no, because there's another 5,000 equally qualified people out there. There's always someone available. Do I have to stop at 5? Well, no, I'm old, I'm going to have good days, I'm going to have bad days, right? If I'm having a good day, hey, I'm doing 12 hours, man. And it's okay. You can be that flexible because it's not industrialized. It's not mass production anymore. It's individualized, customized service. But it's also individualized, customized labor. They're very important. So, yeah, you know, industrial age, uniformity. Yeah, I think even, think about industrial age politics. Right. It's the politics of mass. It's the politics of the provincial, of the political party. Everybody believes the same thing, and they're a mass, and they do something. Okay, you're bleeping. Oh, okay. Incoming. Okay. Well, I can't put the conference on hold. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Our own conference, people. Well, that's okay. We're learning as we go, right? That's okay. Sorry, conference people, if you're listening. I know that it's 10:39 a.m. my time, which means we probably have about, 20 minutes left? Yeah. Pretty good, huh? So I could go on talking about diversity for a long time, but, you know, again, like, it's the difference between an element like lead or gold or something where everything is the same, and a living thing that's organic, that is a whole bunch of different things connected together. The lead or the gold or the iron, that's industrial age.
And that's what they used, and that's how they built their society, a society of similarity of mass, of votes, of religions, of things that are the same. In the post-industrial society, it's things that are different but are connected. And that's the fourth principle, is connectivity. No man is an island. And if they were an island, well, I can't go anywhere with that. You know, the idea here is that people can connect to the network. They can connect to each other. There's a mechanism for doing this. They can communicate. You know, it wouldn't be a network without connectivity. That's how important connectivity is. In the world, and I haven't really talked about this a whole lot. Yeah, okay. I don't know, WWW206 Bloemfontein SA. Can I trust you? Okay. Probably not, yeah. It's this connectedness. Now, where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. I didn't talk about this a whole lot, but I want to show you. I do have 20 minutes, and I want to show you this. Remember I made a blog post with my picture? Now, when you make a blog post, Blogger automatically creates a web page, which we saw, right? But Blogger also does something like this. Well, here's the web page. In the background, behind the scenes, it creates an XML file. Now, it's going to, depending on the style sheet here, these things vary. I'm going to have to show you the source. Here's an XML file. And text size increase. Text size. Why isn't there like a really increase? Text size increase. Text size increase. Hey, it looks like I'm tired of that. Okay. That's an XML file. To me, it's like English. I just read it easily, but that's okay. Nobody has to learn XML. The main point here is Blogger and all of these other applications, Flickr and wikis and content management systems and everything, even learning management systems, some of them, produces these files. And every day, more and more things are producing these XML files. Now, why these XML files are useful is that they form a language that can be read by machines. What that means is my website can be connected to yours, not just by the link, but semantically connected by the information that's sent through this XML file. Now what happens is, you saw this, right? This is just sitting on my web page, right? And my web page is here, my XML file is here. They're right beside each other. They're just like, they're like two peas in a pod. It's just humans read this one, machines read this one. Otherwise, they're identical. Now, I read lots of websites. Lots and lots and lots of websites. Hundreds of websites. And I don't know whether they've been updated, whether they've not been updated, whether the author has died. You can't keep track. Because, right? I'm also a very inconsiderate website reader. So I use something called Blog Lines. Blog Lines is pretty nifty. Blog Lines, you know, if I access this on the web, just like all the other stuff. Now, what they have is a program called a harvester, or also sometimes called an aggregator. And what it does is it goes out and reads XML files. That's what it does. Reads XML files, because it can. And so each of these, I subscribe to about 347 sites I read. Each one of these sites produces an XML file. Blog Lines gives me a place to view all of those contents in the same place. So if a website, any of these 347, has been updated, the text will go bold like that. And now I can go to, let's go to EduBloggers. And here's one called A Difference, and I forget who writes this, and he never puts his name on it, whatever. Here's what he wrote today. Garen Kuropatwa. Okay, and he's in the U.S. And I'm not sure exactly when he would have written this. September 4th. He wrote it at 10 in the morning yesterday, so that's been around for a bit. You can tell I'm lagging a little bit. So I'm a day behind in my reading, which means I've got 607. Anyhow, it can be worse than email, except that it's a lot faster to go through than email. Because you don't have to delete them. You read them, you read them. And because they're not going anywhere. They'll be out there on the web. If you want to, you use Google, you find them again. Or if you really want them, I read this, and I go, oh, this is really good. I saved this for later. Well, then I'll just clip it. And what that'll do is it'll just give me a little thing that lets me, I'll just note it. And see, I can just save it in clippings folder or publish to blog. Guess where, if I publish the blog, guess where that comes out? It should actually come out to half an hour, but BlogLines is stupid now. BlogLines doesn't connect to half an hour. So now I have a BlogLines blog in a half an hour, but I didn't want that. So really, BlogLines should just send the information straight to Blogger. It should send the information where I want it to go. That's how these things should work. Right, because it's my content, not BlogLine's content. It doesn't belong to them, it's mine. It should go where I want it to go. But anyhow, that's a little off topic. So I'm reading these things. Right, here's another one, 7 days and more, make widget. And I read these every day. And the reason why I read these every day is they teach me a lot. This is my school. And actually, I don't read them. I missed them yesterday since I was doing other stuff. I was taking pictures of monkeys and zebras. you can take a day off. It's okay. But the thing is, these people form part of my community of practice. These are people who are interested in, and in some cases expert in, and in other cases not. I got a lot of students on here too, because I learn from them too. I learn from everyone. I'm greedy. And they talk about, all of the stuff that I know, all of the blog stuff, all of that, I learned it by reading all of these things. And sometimes we're messing around myself. And, and I create my own experiences too, and I put them in the blog, and I have the RSS feed, and other people can read that. And in fact, I have a bunch of them. I have enough of them that here's a whole list of the RSS feeds I create. So, for example, here's my main website. This is OL Daily. And my website is down right now, but because BlogLine's picked up this content, it's still available. Oh, is it back on? Yay, thank you. my website, with 12 minutes to go on my talk, my website is up. So this is the post that I wrote in Toronto Airport just before I came here. And I have to keep in mind I have 12 hours or 12 minutes left. This is half an hour. This is the blog that we've been looking at all day. And look, pre-conference in Bloemfontein. Not only were you blogged while I talked here, not only were you photographed, not only were you blogged, you've also been syndicated. And so now, this is available in RSS to people who use RSS readers all over the world. This is probably, this particular one has 76 subscribers. OL Daily and this version has 359 subscribers, and this version has 773, and that's on this site. You can see how it sort of propagates. The thing is, anyone can do this. It's open. And, there's no test, no nothing. It's the quality. And, and people say, what makes you so special? I say I'm not. I don't say I'm special at all. Other people might. They make up their own mind. And the way I know that is just the syndication. It's the connection is what makes this possible. And the ideas that I have, by the connections, by the autonomous decision-making, by a diverse group of people who can make their own comments, my ideas If they're good, we'll spread out through the network. And if they're bad, they'll be shut down at source. And I've had ideas that have been shut down at source. And you know what? I'm better for it. Because I've learned, don't try to talk about that one. That one's a non-starter. You know? And that's good. And I share, there's my list of feeds. I share my list of feeds. And now my website is up, in fact. My website is downs.ca. You can't really see that. downes.ca. And yay! It's like an old friend. It's back. So, and down here, it's going to take a few minutes to load, of course. Anyhow, on this site, and it'll be on the left. It's been a long day. On the left-hand side, here's my list. This is what I read every day. All of those things are on the left. Each one of those, click on it, it'll go to a blog. And if you want to do the same thing I do, if you don't have to, and there's other blog readers too, right? You just create a blog on blog lines, and then to add, you click on add, and then you find the feed on this other site. And I can't find the other site at the moment. Don't know where it went. Well, pretend I'm on another site. And you find the feed on the other site. The feed, the address for the feed will be under, it's usually under a little orange button that says XML. And that's usually where you find it. And after, they're hard to find at first, but after you've been looking for them for a little while, they get really easy to find. You know where to look for them. You know, they're kind of like, I don't know, and whatever. beers on a Friday. You know where to find them. The analogies really get stretched at a certain point of time. All of this information is still here on my JotSpot wiki, which also has an RSS feed, although I don't really know why, because I hardly ever change it. But and you can learn about blog lines and other types of services that create other types of feeds. Because again, e-learning 2.0, we're not even out of year one yet. I wrote the paper last October, and you know, so we're still in the first year. We're still connecting all of this stuff, and learning objects and learning resources when they begin to be syndicated using RSS, so that your students, instead of accessing a learning management system, access Blogger. Or blog lines, and they can see all the stuff. If somebody was learning educational technology today, if they just subscribed to the list that I subscribe, they would be an expert in 6 months. Seriously. Well, if they read the stuff too, they have to read it, right? But you know, because these are the experts in the field, and you know, the experts, the students, and the people in between. And the thing is too, once you subscribe, then you want to, you know, you read for a little bit. We come back to that lesson at the beginning, right? The way to begin blogging is to read. You read for a little bit, and then you contribute, and then you become part of this community of practice. And how does the community know you're any good? By your own participation in the community. You contribute. And if your contributions are valuable, that's where you've demonstrated your learning, your credentials. So, Max, I'm going to stop here because I know people are leaving at 4 o'clock. They've got a bus. So I don't want to go over time at all. And there are some very patient people who have been listening online. So I'm going to say for those people who are around the world, if I can find my thingy, I'm going to say goodbye from Africa. It has been a pleasure having you here. And can I say we hope you come back? Yes, so. Positive, right. So, thank you all. I'm going to give you some music to go and thank all of you. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to be able to talk to you and to have, you know, people who stayed in the room. No, it's like I've really appreciated your attention and your interest, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot that you invited me, and it means even more that you're willing to spend a full day with me. So, thank you very much.
Thank Stephen for the workshop today. I've been trying to get in here for a long time. And she's got something else.
license on that? Come here, okay.
Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Sorry. All right, it's the end of the podcast. Go away. I don't know how to stop it. No, I don't know how to stop the podcast.
Oh.
The Skype cast, rather.
Oh.
Yeah, well, they're gone. They've got to be gone.
Okay, And I'd just like to thank Stephen for being here today. And we'll all be listening tomorrow. I don't know how many people will go to the conference, the full conference, but he'll be doing a keynote tomorrow morning as well. And that time we'll probably have a larger audience, because this was, after all, the test to see if it actually works. So we'll see him tomorrow, and thanks again.
And it did work.
It did work.
And I'm in a Skype call right now, and people are just leaving, and I'm just going to close off the conference. There we go. I don't know if I've closed that off or not. Live and learn.
Okay, we won't leave you without some coffee and refreshments.
Oh,
so down in the hall, there are some coffee and refreshments.
Yes.
And then the bus will
Hang
be
on.
Leaving at 4:15. It's in front of the gates. The bus will be leaving. And then anybody who feels he can't drive home tonight after the function are more than welcome to get on the bus.